This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. You're on the Escape Hour with Fiona, Tad and Russ. It is a gorgeous afternoon, and that was Zorba the Greek, techno version, which we can only get live here at Joy 94.9. Right. Wasn't it fabulous? I have on the panel today, I forgot what time of the day it is, I have the gorgeous Fiona Brooke. How are you, darling, and what are you wearing this week?
Well, I do have a pretty special item on, actually. These stunning trousers made for me by a friend who I recently grabbed. You see, because I'm a massive collector of fabric when I travel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
Wherever I go, I have to buy a piece of fabric as a memory of a particular place. And I recently took a whole bunch of these collections because obviously it ends up having a lot of fabric lying around. These are made from a beautiful silk hand-woven cloth from the souks of Aleppo.
Right.
Wow.
Which, of course, sadly no longer exist.
No, they don't. But
10th century souks, gone forever. Anyway, so I thought I'd wear them in today as a bit of a memory of my trip to Syria.
Well, you're looking fabulous, as always.
Thank you.
As always.
The other member of our illustrious panel on the Escape Hour is Tad Lombardi. Come on down.
Lombardo.
Lombardo, excuse me. Okay. I stand corrected.
That's okay.
How are you, Tad?
I'm well. How about you?
I'm very good indeed. I've had a great week, but I am interested on how we all feel about one subject this week. We are hearing rumblings in the in the travel and the food world of the demise of the selfie. What do we think about this, guys?
For me, I don't take a good selfie, so I think I'm fine with it.
Okay. All right. You're good with no selfies?
Yeah.
I always notice when I travel the age difference between, I'm not saying I'm old or anything, but the difference in ages between those people that are taking photos of the scenery and those people that are taking photos of themselves. And I swear there is an absolute difference. You just look around and a whole lot of people that are under the age of 25 are just taking photos of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yawn.
Well, it has been reported out of Europe this week that several towns in Europe have decided that they are banning the selfie, that they feel that their township is too beautiful to warrant all of these people wandering around taking photos of themselves and not taking photos of the magnificent scenery. So is that a thumbs up? I think it is.
I think it's good.
I mean, admittedly, they're getting the scenery in the background.
Yes, but with that big head right in the middle.
Yeah. At the end of the day... I can't help myself. No, but I mean, they're not going to stop people from doing selfies. It's just going to be an awareness thing to make people look at the scenery. There's a lot more important things in the world to police
than selfies.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you. And you, Mr. Foodie, how do you feel about people taking those photos of food all the time?
Leave the camera at home or leave the phone at home, you know, because again, you're missing out on the experience, you're missing out on the presentation of it, and it's meant to be consumed when it's plated or placed in front of you, not 10 minutes after you've gotten that perfect photo to put up on Instagram.
I believe in one of our Metro newspapers on Sunday, there will actually be an article, it is possibly even going to be tomorrow, on the effect of social media and on the food scene in Melbourne.
Yep.
So check that out.
I'll be reading that with glee. So a couple of thank yous, and then we're on to our special guest who's from Greece today. So go ahead.
Absolutely. Yep. First, we want to thank Adam Samuels for that lovely introduction and, of course, the news. Mm-hmm. We want to thank Neil on the front desk and Peter Tocknell, our podcast artist. Is that his title?
It is. He is our podcast artist.
If he could sort through this waffle mess.
And which make he it will. Sound he does good. It every week. Yeah.
Bless him. Bless him.
He's an artist.
He is an artist.
And during our show today, if anyone would like to get in touch with us, you can SMS us on 0427-JOY949. You can call us on 1-300-JOY949. Email us on air@joy.org.au. And we'll be happily and ready to take your
message. It would be wonderful if we started hearing from listeners about where they wanted us to travel to next.
That's a very good idea.
Throw the challenge out because, you know, that will get us scurrying with some cool talent.
All right, let's do it. If you would like us to visit a destination or report on some food while in this gorgeous city of ours, please do send us in a message and we will get onto that destination or that restaurant and we'll give you our critique.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, we are talking all things Greek, fabulous and wonderful today. Fiona, please, intro of our special guest.
Well, Yorgos is a wonderful a friend and associate who has his own boutique Athens business, which specializes, of course, in boutique accommodation in Athens, apartments, houses, and Yorgos has a partner based in Greece. And we're here to talk really, about Greece in general, but very specifically about Athens and the return of Athens as a destination. Yorgos, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
It's very exciting.
It is very exciting.
Lots to go through today. And again, it's about the local scene, the food, traveling around Athens, and the sort of off the beaten track stuff too, which we were talking earlier about. What is, from your point of view, why should people come to Athens at this point?
Athens is now a destination that's fascinating to a lot of visitors because on a first level it combines the very old and the very new. And when we say the very old, Athens is a layered city through the ages. When they were digging up to create the underground metro, they realized that depending on the depth of the dig, they discovered seven layers of different cities since the classical Athens.
Amazing.
So that's there are some areas of inner city Athens that you can still see antiquities that belong to one of those seven different periods. So there is that, and there is also the more recent history of the city, which is visible everywhere. There is also the financial crisis of the last 7 years that has created a very interesting mix amongst people, businesses, and things to do in Athens.
Well, they say necessity is the mother of invention, and obviously the crisis has created that for Athens. And coming up next, we're gonna hear more about that.
3,000-year-old city. Yeah. We are here today to dissect Athens and find all about it.
I've missed my favorite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry, our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We've got Yorgi Sarexidis. Did I say that right?
That's right, yes.
That was close enough, wasn't it?
Yes.
In the studio with us today, talking all things Athens and Greece and the birthplace of democracy. Obviously, it's a very innovative place. And before the break, we were talking about the financial crisis and how that has changed things for Greece and how people have had to be very ingenious in how they move forward with their lives as a result of the crisis. From your point of view, in the, sort of the hospitality side of things, and the travel, what do you see as the biggest impact that's had on people and how they've had to react to continue living?
At the beginning of the crisis, there was it was a shock to everybody. Yeah. Incomes.
So it wasn't something that was expected, obviously.
It did come as a shock.
Yeah.
The size of the sovereign debt was concealed by successive governments,
right.
So ordinary people had no idea how bad things were until it happened, and that eventually and very quickly filtered down to their incomes, their pensions, their job opportunities, and so on. So it was a bit of a shock, but it was remarkable that people adjusted very, very quickly because when you have no other option, you just have to adjust,
of course,
to the new reality.
Yeah.
And that's that meant a lot of people had to find ways to make do with less.
Yeah.
That in turn, especially amongst younger people, created an amazing wave of creativity.
Yeah.
When you don't have enough funds to set up a business, you find other ways to set up a small business.
Right.
Things that helped people move forward were, for instance, the fact that property prices collapsed. Rentals collapsed. That meant people with, usually younger people, could live in the city,
right,
paying very small rents. There were rents, monthly rents, that went down from 500 euro a month to 100 euro a month, or less. So that helped a lot of people find make home in the center of the city. And that was really, for us too, my partner and I, that was the reason why we saw an opportunity to set up a business in the center, and at the same time help some of the neighborhoods that we absolutely loved because of the way they looked, the old residents that were still there, help them survive in the new era, the era of financial crisis. And so that helped everybody find a new way of being, really, in the city.
Yep. And in your specific case, you went to a neighborhood that was dilapidated?
Yeah, it was a neighborhood that had half of the buildings were neoclassical ruins, buildings that were originally built in the turn of the 20th century. Yeah. And they were abandoned for some of them since the post-war years.
Right.
In the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, those neighborhoods had a very strong semi-industrial feel about them. A lot of small manufacturing businesses were housed there. And of course, they went out of business in the new era with the cheap inputs and so on. So there were empty buildings everywhere. Very few residents left. And just us walking around the neighborhoods and marveling at how real they felt and how interesting, and yet there was no economic activity that would survive in the immediate future.
Right.
So we thought we will try to convince people to stay in an apartment instead of a hotel room.
Yeah.
That was about 9 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Pre-Airbnb and pre all those platforms that sell apartment living all around the world at the moment. So we started. It was hard at the beginning, but it was also, for us, it was we loved being amongst those people there, the old timers that were still there.
Yeah.
And amongst those old buildings, a lot of those buildings had clear signs of Ottoman-era occupation, going back 200 to 300 years before we were there. Some of them, our building, for instance, has down in the ground, in the basement, it has signs of an ancient river that runs from the foothills of the Acropolis.
Really?
Under the our building and that general area, and then it ends up in Piraeus, in the port. So we looked at old maps, and we discovered that the ancient river Eridanos, mentioned in various texts, it runs under the building.
Right.
And when they, as part of the works of the new metro in Athens, they renovated the Monastiraki train station, they exposed the river.
Right.
And you can now stand on a glass platform and see
it.
It still trickles down from
That's fascinating.
From Acropolis, yes.
Yeah. And in the neighborhood where your building is currently, have other people started doing that with the other buildings?
Yes, over the last 4 or 5 years, Greece and Athens in particular has had an explosion of visitation from all over the world. A lot of Australians do come to Athens, and they spend 6, 7, 8 days just taking it all in, exploring modern Athens. And so a lot of buildings from being completely unoccupied are now being transformed into accommodation. A lot of large warehouse type of spaces become modern accommodation for tourists and people who choose to live there. A lot of non-Greeks are buying into the very attractive property market in Athens at the moment.
And that's not a government program. This is just the individual people taking
totally
control.
Totally organic, dynamic, from the ground up growth. It's necessity that created all that. And it's still happening, and there's still a lot of room. Athens is also a city that experienced a lot of legal and illegal refugee visitation. Yeah. And, of course, most refugees, they tend to, once they land on dry land, they tend to want to make their way to the city because that's where they have a chance of working out which way to go next, how to get to Germany or to Northern Europe or to wherever they want to go. And it's also easier for them to survive there.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
So here we are at Joy. We are talking all things Greece with Tad, Russ and Yorgos. Of course, we're also touching every Greek cliche along the way. So what I'm hearing,
Love
Yorgos...
Love Denise.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing, Yorgos, is that Athens really is a destination that we must get to as a, instead of just as a stopover on your way to the islands. The other day you said to me, When Athens was going through the early parts of the crisis, that it was Athens is the new Berlin.
Yeah.
And now?
There was a street art has proliferated because street art, you don't need a studio. You don't need to spend much on paint. You just need to buy cheap cans and hit the street and avoid the police. We started seeing a lot of slogans in the street. Athens is the new Berlin. That was about 6, 7 years ago. Now, in the last couple of years, the slogans have become Athens is the new Athens.
Fantastic.
That's how far that transformation has. And of course, besides the look in the street and on the walls painted, the fact that this year Athens was hosting Documenta 14, which Europeans regard as the most important arts event in the calendar. It happens every 5 years. And up until the 13th version of Documenta, Kassel in Germany was the only venue. For the first time, the current director of Documenta decided to have the show in an annex city, and Athens was the city they chose for a very good reason. Athens is really, in the eyes of many people in Europe or people who follow the financial crisis and its cultural repercussions, is the guinea pig of Europe. This is where they're trying out their ideas of how to deal with the debt, how to deal with the social ramifications of austerity measures, and so on. So it's inevitable that that filtered down to street level and the art. And and this year, Documenta, which is still going, it's about to end and then move to for the second half in Germany. in Kassel, created an amazing wave of visitation of people interested in the arts from all over the world. Quite a lot. We had in our apartments quite a lot of Australian gallery owners, curators, people working for the NGV, National Gallery of Victoria, and the National Gallery in Canberra were staying with, you know, for anything up to 2 weeks, just so that they would sample some of the events of Documenta 14. So yes, Athens is now the new Athens in many respects, and that's part of that economic crisis.
What's the best place to eat in Athens? I can't. I love Greek food. I absolutely adore it. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the food scene like?
It's the food scene is always great in Greece and in Athens because Greeks love good food. Mm-hmm. They love sitting down and eating with friends and family, and a lot of the establishments that even the trendiest ones have you know, if you go to the fanciest latest place in this city, you might find that it has become popular with, you know, the very young people, the bohemians, or the, you know, some subset of the very young. In Greece, you'll find that a lot, it's not ageist in that regard. All places welcome all people, all the younger, you know, foreigners, locals, everybody. So there is that openness to all places. They don't, by their look or the way they set up, they don't stop people from coming in. So and food tends to be very, very cheap. As I said to you before, there is a 2-Michelin-star restaurant in one of the ruined neighborhoods and rediscovered neighborhoods of central Athens, in Metaxourgeio, which is you can have a 3-course meal of your choice for under €50, about $70.
That's amazing.
I think here you'll need a few hundred dollars if you go into a Michelin star restaurant.
Wow. Yes, absolutely.
Where our favorite place, my friend, my associates, and we tend to advise, our guests to go there. It's a little place with 4 or 5 tables in the back of a little shop, like a milk bar. Yeah. So you go down the side, a narrow passageway, you go, and it's a domestic kitchen, a brother and sister. Cook one meal a day, and it's really almost the classic Mediterranean diet. Yeah. So you'll have red meat one day a week, you'll have fish one day a week, you have chicken, then you'll have your lentils and your beans and your fresh veggies, and that place is really there to service the local fresh food market workers who work they start work very early, they finish early, so they typically go there 12 midday for lunch, which is very early for Greece. But in that place you can have a full meal with wine or beer, a salad, and it would cost you under €5.
Wow.
And it's a meal that my mother cooks. You know, it's that kind of food.
The thing with Greek cuisine is it's more rustic and too much refinement sort of frowned upon. And it's one of the more flavorful types of cuisine in the Mediterranean, which is why we all love it.
It also tends to be seasonal. Yeah. Greece, I find... even now, with the changes in the market changes and having part of the European Union, that means they have to accept some produce that comes from Belgium, for instance, instead of growing it themselves. Even now, most places would be cooking seasonal. Most restaurants and eateries would be cooking seasonal. So if you went there in the middle of winter, you wouldn't be asking in those places. In the touristy places, it's a different story. But say in Psiri, where we are, you won't find a for a winter salad. You'd be getting a cabbage salad, shredded cabbage and carrots instead of the so-called Greek salad.
What's your favorite dish?
I love the fish in this place. They buy not expensive fish. They buy calamari, baby calamari, octopus, whitebait, sardines. Mm. I love all those dishes with those very cheap seafood items. But sardines is one of my all-time favorites. Mm. And it's sad that the world is not eating more sardines because one thing that's not under the threat of extinction is sardines worldwide.
Right. Yes.
Yes, too many sardines in the seas. Yeah, and they're begging to get, they're giving it away in some places, but people are not eating it. And you know what? The humble sardine is probably the most nutritious thing that comes out of the water.
What's your favorite sweet? And, you know, in ancient Greece, there were no there was no sugar, so they used a lot of honey to sweeten things.
Yeah,
it's obviously still today a lot of the desserts are based on honey.
We in Greece, what we regard as Greek sweets are really the Middle Eastern influenced sweets like baklava and galaktoburako, and those syrupy, you know, lukumades and all those. So, yeah, we call them Greek sweets, but the influence really goes through Turkey and the Middle East. And even some of them have Indian influences.
Right, okay.
A lot of the mix of spices, for instance, that gets used today, that we call it as coming from Asia Minor, it really, if you look at history and the travel of the spices comes from India. So some influences are from
That's fascinating. It's really and again olive oil, that's another huge thing in Greece, and there's still some, you know, 13th century trees that are producing fruit now, which is quite fascinating.
My brother has a small block of land in near the site of Marathon, it has about two dozen olive trees. About half of them are estimated to be 1,000 years old at least.
It's incredible,
And they're still producing fruit. Right. They're still without you don't water those old trees,
right?
So it's very little fruit, but very tasty.
But those trees
fruit.
Could talk though. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah,
you know,
the
history.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, and you know, apparently there's about 120 million olive trees throughout Greece, and it's the third largest olive oil producer in the world, which is pretty amazing.
A lot of regions in Greece pride themselves as making the best olive oil there is, like some parts of the Peloponnese and some parts of Crete. And I have tasted oil from one particular region in the Peloponnese where a friend lives, and he's lucky enough to have inherited an olive grove, an ancient olive grove. And it's olive oil that you can drink half a cup in the morning before you have your coffee. It's that kind of.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I guess you don't really think of olive oil as doing that, but if you know, if it's the good stuff like that,
it is. I keep telling my partner that if you have olive oil for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, you won't need to go to the doctor anymore, and your skin will be so much.
Well, that's the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yes, I certainly have friends that just rub olive oil on their skin.
Yeah.
Yep. They use it as a moisturizer.
Yeah.
And you can use it for lots of things for health.
Yeah.
It's good for gallbladders.
Absolutely.
And you can do this crazy thing called oil pulling.
Which
is oil pulling, which is where you put the oil in your mouth and you move it around your mouth for about 20 minutes in the morning.
Oh, really?
Okay. I'll have to double check. Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. Something that you might see on some health website.
Right.
I'll have
Google
to get back to you about what it's for later.
What's the go with plate smashing? Now, I've been to a couple of Greek restaurants in my time, and I had this is in my younger days when I'd had too much to drink, and I just picked up a plate off a table and smashed it on the ground.
Yeah.
And I was very upset when I found out I had to pay for it, but.
Was it Versace?
That's right, exactly.
That started in the 60s, and actually the film Zorba the Greek is responsible for that that myth, as well as other myths about Greece. But I tend to blame Zorba the Greek for creating a lot of misconceptions about Greece. Yes. But anyway,
about breaking misconceptions.
Yes. But I'll tell you my understanding of the plates. My mother, when we're having big family gatherings and celebrating something or other, which was very often, when she was getting in the mood, and she was, you know, the kefi we call in Greek, and she was feeling really high, you know, and enjoying herself without having a drop of wine, mind you, she would go to her kitchen cupboard and she would bring out a few of her best plates and smash them when her brothers or my father or you know, everybody was dancing to show that they were in her home, and this was the way of expressing to them how happy she was that they felt so hospitable enough to get up and dance on her floor. Amazing. So she would smash it in front of their feet. That was the thing. Yeah. It was a kind of appreciation for philoxenia, you know, for being hospitable. And it was a way of showing it. But of course, then the tavernas picked up the thing. And when the tourists started coming, especially the ones who had seen the film, Zorba the Greek, then they thought, oh, hold on, if we sell some of these plates to these tourists and get them to smash them. And they were ordering hundreds of plates, cheap plates, and actually selling them to putting it in the bill at the end of the night. You'll have the consumables plates.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to the Escape Hour. We have Yorgos Sarixidis. Did I say that right?
Thank you.
That's
twice
in a row. who's talking all things about Athens and Greece. And we've had a great conversation about food and travel, and it's continuing now. And here we go.
You know what? One of the most interesting things about going to that part of the world, Greece is always continually comes up on the top airfares that are bargains as far as getting to Europe.
Yeah.
One of the Singapore Airlines has a discount carrier, and they at various times of the year you can buy a return airfare with them to Athens for only about $799. And currently, the big full service airlines have return airfares for about $11.99. So it's definitely, it's a great gateway to Europe, and very affordable to get there. So I'm actually going there this October.
Is that right?
You didn't tell us that before.
No, I know. I've just been very quiet about it. Yes, but my partner who...
Did you put in for your leave yet?
I haven't actually. Okay. Yes, I must speak to the powers to be in the escape.
Yes, have you
escape
asked
hour.
Us?
Yeah. I do apologise. But that's going to be fantastic. I've been listening very hard today, so I'll be going to that restaurant that you suggested. But my partner is just... this is our first time to Greece, and he's got us going to Thessalonica and all these wonderful places, but he's a history buff. So what is it with Athens? And I know it was the city of gods back in the early days, and it's just it's got so much history, hasn't it?
It has a lot of history, more history than most cities, because it's one of the oldest cities in the world, really, that has been continually inhabited as a city since about 3,500 years years ago. Its most glorious part, I guess, it's the classical Athens, the 4th century BC, which saw the building of the Parthenon and the Pericles reign, who's responsible for what we call democracy. Mm-hmm. One of the great visits in Athens, once you're in the center, is not to climb the Acropolis, but to climb a hill that's across the road, so to speak, from Acropolis, called Philopappou Hill. And on that hill, there is a flat area of land with some rocky formations at the back of it. It's almost like an amphitheater, but without the seats, just the land. And that is the place where democracy was practiced. Mm. Athenians during the classical century were gathering there, and every single one of them had the right to climb on the rock and speak to the congregation about whatever they wanted to speak, yeah, whatever issue they wanted to raise. It's the first known instance of democracy in practice, where we all have equal rights to raise issues and discuss them and decide on them. And that's a beautiful little spot that you can go and look at. There's a little plaque that will direct you there. But also from there, you can look at the Parthenon across the other hill. And you feel like you can touch it if you stretch it enough. It's hundreds of meters away, of course. It's a different hill. But it's a lovely... And not many tourists go there. The locals go there because it's a lovely walk right through, the year. Yeah.
It's fascinating. I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
Melbourne has the second largest Greek population outside of Athens, which is pretty fascinating. From your point of view, why do you think that is?
Because Greece in the 1950s and 60s... as most of Europe south, was decimated by changes in agriculture and how produce was moved around Europe. That meant a lot of areas that survived, hundreds, thousands of villages in Greece that survived on agriculture, they could do no more. So they had, their choice was either to emigrate to one of the big cities, typically Athens or Salonika, or go overseas. And at the time, of course, Australia had a program of taking southern European immigrants, Italians, Greeks, Yugoslavs, Turks, and so that's why a lot of people left at the time.
Right.
The village where I was born and I was there up until the age of five, the reason why we left the village, my family left the village in 1961, 62, was because there was no way of them making a living anymore there. And in the space of the next decade, the entire village was emptied of people and families. Half of them went overseas, Germany, Belgium, Canada, Australia. And the other half went to the big cities.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
And the best time of year to go to Athens in Greece is obviously in the Northern Hemisphere summer, is that right? Which is now.
It is. It's always fun to be there during the right now.
Yeah.
I'm going next Saturday. I'll be there next Saturday.
Okay.
People complain about the heat, but I love the heat. Mm. There's nothing like having a minimum temperature of 24 degrees during the evening,
especially
sleeping with the windows open and all that. So, but also, you know, if you you mentioned you might be going in October. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic time of the year to be there. You can still swim. The water is still warm. You get full sunshine every day. The only difference with the middle of summer is that the temperature might go up to 25, 28 degrees. Mm-hmm. And at nighttime, it will drop a little further. It will be 18, 20. Right. But it's a very good time of the year to visit anywhere in Greece, because obviously the mass, the great mass of the tourists, they've gone back to their jobs, in Northern Europe. So it's a good time to visit. Also, early spring, around Easter time, it's a great time to visit.
I know Fiona loves the shop, and she's right into flea markets, and I know Athens has many flea markets.
Yes. And there is now a new generation of shop owners who are doing vintage clothing like here.
Wow. And
some of it is the access pool for that vintage clothing, of course, can be the whole Balkan Peninsula, parts of old Soviet republics. A lot of weird and wonderful stuff turns up in those little shops.
I think that you need to organize some vintage clothing tours for some of your guests.
There are people who do that.
There are
people who do tours of new, young, and exciting shops in the area of Psiri and Gazi and all those inner areas.
And is it is homosexuality legal there, and it's quite safe to travel in Greece?
It is legal. It's safe to travel, but you have to bear in mind that Greece is a traditional society. That unfortunately the church still plays a large role in public matters, and it shouldn't be. There's no clear separation between the state and the church. So in Athens you won't have a problem. It's well established that for the gay community there are no problems whatsoever. But if you're traveling in the countryside and you're visiting a small village, you might not want to be as free as you would like to be, because you might scandalize some, redneck sort of part of the community, some priests. They are everywhere, but so taking normal precautions that you might do in all parts of the world that are not as advanced as they should be, but that doesn't apply for the big centers. And of course, Athens is a great destination. Mykonos is one of the must visit place for a lot of people in the community, but also other islands like smaller islands. And of course, Mytilene or Lesbos is a great place to visit and feel free in.
Yorgos, what's your favorite place to visit when you're in Greece and you're not working?
Well, my new favorite place, because I like to change my favorite place.
Good idea.
It's a little island near Athens. Mm-hmm. In the summer, it's only about an hour and a half away, and it's the island of Seriphos.
Seriphos,
yes. It's a beautiful island.
Tell us what's so special about the island.
It's a classic Kyklades island. Kyklades is the main cluster of islands in central Aegean that, Santorini and Mykonos and Paros are part of. Mm-hmm. But it's the northernmost island, so it's a lot closer to the Piraeus, the port. And it's the old town up on top of the hill. It has the classic architecture of the Greek islands, which you love to just wander amongst those tiny little
houses. How beautiful!
It's a new favorite.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
It is time for us to, talk to Yorgos about some final things in regards to Greece. I think we're all, ready to book our flights.
I'm going to go now.
Absolutely. So, Yorgos, I know that during the early parts of the crisis, there was quite a lot of rioting and other situations. I guess one of the questions that some people might be asking is, How safe is it in Athens currently?
Athens is and was, even during those difficult years of the constant rioting, one of the safest cities in the world, really. And it's easily probably the safest city in Europe. Barring incidents such as pickpockets,
which is everywhere.
It's everywhere. But you know, if you walk the streets here in the city, Melbourne, you might see a lot of people having their iPhone or their wallet in the back pocket.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't do that in Athens with millions of people around. It'd be provocative. Well, somebody will pick it.
Yeah, what's the word for come to grace? In Greek,
elates in Ellada.
That's perfect.
Beautiful.
I want to go. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for coming into the studio and spending some time with us and letting us know all about Greece and Athens and the places to go and places to eat. And I look forward to a trip there sometime soon. And
we're out to have some baklava now, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
We'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.